I'm Haley.
I'm John.
And I'm Will.
And we're from Crimson Comet, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual host.
Check out other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
I prefer to jazzercise my demons, but yeah.
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Proactionary. Proactionary? Is that a word?
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 117 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we fantasize about Christmases past and romanticize them to the point that they make Norman Rockwell look like Nightmare Before Christmas, then get upset that our expectations weren't met while relatives argue politics and religion, and we're all reminded why it's been a full year since we all got together. Ah, Christmas.
Fa-la-la-la, get out now, go.
I'm your host, Haley Malley, and with me today in the GPR studios are Keir Hansen. Keir, how are you today?
I'm feeling 1 year older and wiser.
Wiser, that's good.
Yeah, wiser. I read this thing that came in the mail today.
And Jay Witten, how are you, Jay?
I'm probably one too many eggnogs deep, but I'm good.
Well, you know,
can you hear
one person's too many is another's just right.
Yes. This week, we're taking a look back at previous Christmas specials and sifting out what works from what really, really didn't, all in the hopes that last Christmas can match the memories that we've got while doing nothing to remind us of others. So pour some more eggnog. It's time to talk Christmas.
I think we're going to move the eggnog away from you for about the next 45 minutes or so, if that's all right.
But
move it closer to me. How about?
It's yeah. Aunt Esther's recipe, though.
Oh, I always loved her definition of light.
Exactly.
I want to make sure that we keep one thing kind of sitting there on the shelf like that creepy elf doll and staring at us with those dead eyes while we do this. And that's that, well, we keep as we knew that last Christmas, or the episode last Christmas, let me just make sure that I keep having to put, you know, quotey fingers around that our upcoming Christmas episode, as we've been discussing it and hypothesizing what we're going to get out of it, that, and we look back on the old Christmas episodes, we're like, well, you know, this is, you know, we're now getting to the point where these episodes are becoming more of a part of the outgoing or incoming season, and they're not standalone. Well, let's just really be cognizant of whether or not there are elements in many of these that we've been given since 2005 that actually do have some bearing on the season to come, or to close out the season it bookends. So just want to put that there.
Yeah. So the first episode that, and it was more of a coincidence than anything, I think, that aired on Christmas was back in 1966 with the Feast of Stephen. And this was, you know, first Doctor run. And it was part of the 12-part Daleks master plan, and this was like part 7.
Yeah, and well, the 12. This being the longest or the most extensive episode story that they had done, and 12-parter, made War Games and some of the other juggernauts, you know, pale in comparison. Mm. But it has a sort of a public opinion of running a bit long in the tooth as a result.
Yeah. But I mean, this was very loosely tied into the Dalek Master Plan. I mean, this really was like, let's step aside, let's celebrate Christmas, let's give everybody a break before we get back into it, kind of thing. I mean, it was halftime, is what it boiled down to.
Yeah. Oh, because of the coincidence of the fact that the day that it actually aired, you know, there's a tip of the hat and a raise of the glass to the audience. You know, great.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, complete with like the breaking the fourth wall ending of the Doctor looking at the camera and saying, you know, Happy Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Which do I remember? Was that also in when they did that? Didn't they recognize that moment at a certain scene in Adventure in Space and Time? I thought that was one little moment in that biopic that they, as they were, you know, doing sort of a montage element of the increasing popularity of the show, and the fact that it became something where people were even crowded around to watch it on Christmas Day. I could have sworn. I'm going to have to do a little research on it.
That might be. I don't. Darn, I'm going to have to go back and watch an Adventure Space and Time again. Oh, shucks.
Darn.
Such a chore.
The burden.
And then that was really the only time that we got a Christmas special in the classic series. Mm. Because they pretty much steered away from it after that. So then the next one that we get is obviously Christmas Invasion. So end of series one, Ninth Doctor has regenerated. And now we have a brand new Doctor that we don't get to see until, like, you know, 30 minutes in.
Right.
He was really sleepy.
His hair was very much under control.
Yeah. But this was a, you know, I mean, they were basically shoving it down your throat that it was Christmas, complete with the robot Santas and the attack Christmas trees. And you know, it was just so much like, hey, pay attention, it's Christmas. But at the same time, this was our introduction to a new Doctor. So it had to fit into the overall story as well.
Right. Introduction to the Doctor for the audience, but it was also a matter of making sure that your supporting companion cast was going to be on board with him, so that by the time you pick up at the top of the 2006 or call it series two, that everybody was sort of gelled, and that they were ready to move forward with this new iteration of their title character. Mm-hmm. I personally still love this episode.
Oh yeah. I actually caught it on BBC America yesterday or the day before. Just happened to come across it, and I was like, "Man, this was a really good episode." And it was incredible the faith that Davies had in Tennant to say, "You know what? This is your first episode, but I'm only going to give you like 10 minutes to win the audience over."
Right.
And I mean, from the moment that Tennant woke up and came out of the TARDIS, you were like, "Yes, it's the Doctor!" You know, and you're just—he really just completely took over at that point.
But one of the things actually that I personally loved about it, and it was really rewarding to be able to go back and catch it, because I don't always, I tend to glaze over the Christmas episodes when I'm doing some rewatches and things, unless there's something in particular that I really want that completion on. But Billy Piper really killed it in this episode. I mean, her emotional breakdowns, her, the roller coaster that she's going through in terms of coming to terms with how she really feels about the Doctor that she had known, and the loss when she thinks that everything has changed and the Doctor really has abandoned her, really, really comes from a deep point, and I gave her a lot of credit in that.
Well, yeah, and she basically kind of facilitated the grieving process of the audience at that point, because there were a lot of people that were coming into the show again at that point that this was the first time that they'd ever dealt with a regeneration. And they're like, no, what happened to my Doctor? And Rose was able to give them voice at that point and say, look, this is the process that we go through. It's okay. You can work through it, and really help the audience to accept in it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, I was in that situation. This is the first time I'd ever seen a Doctor regenerate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little traumatic. Like, you needed some help getting through that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, did you know about the process of regeneration before that?
I had a vague understanding. Like, I knew something happened and then the actor changed, but I didn't really know what went into it.
Okay. Because I've actually had some people that I was able to get into the show without them knowing anything about it. And you could tell by the time they made it to Parting of the Ways, it was just, they were destroyed. It was brutal. And then you get this episode and it really does help them to be like, okay, maybe this guy's not so bad. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, just you wait.
And really, when you go back this far, you start picking up on a lot of the elements where you have to give a lot of credit to RTD as a showrunner. Mm-hmm. And just some of the things, you know, we talk often about the complex infrastructure, script-wise and long and short-term story arcs and so forth that Moffat likes to lay down because look how clever I am. But RTD was just as adept within his scale for doing things like the Torchwood setups and all those aspects, or the Handy Doctor, you know, and all these things that were seeded so brilliantly along the way to make use of later. So you get episodes like this, you know, because it's one of the reasons why I said at the top here, just think about how really are these really encapsulated, or does each one have something to hand to the viewers to take forward into the next season? Well, this is definitely I mean, there's breadcrumbs galore through here.
Yeah. Well, then the next one that we get is Runaway Bride. So, and this comes right on the heels of Doomsday. And so, I mean, we had just lost the Doctor, and now we've just lost Rose in one of the most heartbreaking scenes ever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, and then you're thrust right into this, you know, here's this new strange person on the TARDIS, and how did they get here? And the Doctor's still in tears, and it's just like, what the heck? And then you go through this crazy madcap adventure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say, did you get, I mean, it's pretty clear that the whole Christmas concept of this one is sort of secondary, if not tertiary, through the, mm-hmm. through the whole story. It just happened to be that date in the calendar, and Donna even makes really explicit point of that. But it's just interesting that they knew that they had to kind of shake it off, you know. Oh, everybody, that was really emotional. The whole thing with Rose and the bad whooping. Oh, okay, let's bring in the really loud comedian. Okay.
Yeah. Every time I go, every time I think about this one, I'm like, oh yeah, Donna. Oh wait.
Right, that Donna.
Donna.
This is the.
Do you think if Donna had become the companion after this episode, that she would have been as hated as Martha is?
It depends. Would we have gotten the Donna that we eventually got, or would we have just gotten this Donna evolving into that one?
I don't know.
I think you get the same Donna. I mean, I think from what the writer started doing for her when they got a good sense of the dynamic and chemistry that she intended share on screen, mm-hmm. that would have evolved just the same. As far as the hatred factor, I don't think so, because it wouldn't have been something that felt like, oh, you're doing the romantic thing again.
Right. The rebound companion.
Right. Donna would have been that buffer that said, okay, well, clearly the companion does not have to be smitten, because she ain't smitten. I'm bothered.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that the main reason that Martha gets a lot of hate is because, one, we did go through the emotional, emotional thing with Rose, and then we get the, oh, look, I'm so in love with the Doctor, but nothing's happening kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, because that's the girl that he's supposed to be with, and you're just this interloper, and people didn't like that. But then the also the thing is, just some of the stories in series 3 were not all that great,
not as strong, right? Because I thought about this the last time I was rewatching it, like how much of the Martha hate is rebound love of Rose, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and I think it's maybe 50-50. That's where I landed.
But see, when you go into this, though, is if you look at this story, there was enough excitement and enough adventure and enough of the, you know, the Doctor opening up to someone new, that it did facilitate him, you know, moving on to another companion.
Right.
And, you know, it was that we don't have to deal with the heartbroken over Rose not being there anymore. So,
mm-hmm. yeah, by the end of the episode, he's ready to move on.
Yeah. And thankfully not with Donna, because I remember my first time through watching this, when it got to the point where I was like flipping through Netflix and I got to series 4 and it was like, wait, no, that's the, oh, you've got to be kidding me. Donna is the companion now. This is going to suck. And then by the time I got to the exchange through the windows thing, I was like, okay, well, maybe it's not that bad.
Yeah. But still, you got to say the whole, the car chase sequence. Mm-hmm. And Runaway Bride was really enjoyable, and the two kids in the back of the Land Rover watching the whole thing happen. Come on.
Oh yeah. But it had its moments, but at the same time it was like, yeah, I need Donna to stop talking for like 3 minutes.
Yeah. Not to mention the fact that we now had at that point solidified the fact that you can't have a Christmas episode without creepy tin robots. So, because that was our return to our tin Santas.
Yeah.
Now with something else under the hood. And by the time we get to the next season and we get to Voyage of the Damned, we've traded them from Santas for angels, but they're still creepy tin robots.
Yeah. And I mean,
it's called tradition, Kier. Get with the spirit.
So was it just me, or did it seem strange that we had the creepy tin angels after we had the weeping angels?
A little, but I not really, since they didn't really act tinny at the outset. I remember the first time I saw it thinking we were back to an Autumn story. Okay. They looked sort of plasticky, so I thought that's where we were headed.
See, it just bothered me. I was like, well, no, you had fantastic angel creatures before. These are just, why are you going with another angel setup kind of thing? And it just, it never fit all that well for me watching through. Now that I can go back and watch it by itself, okay, they make sense. It's okay. It's a whole Christmas theme kind of thing. But at the time going through it, you know, one right after the other, like I did, it was like, no, it is too close to this. This is just not cool.
It's just a less good version of the thing you just did.
Exactly.
Very true.
Thank you for putting that so eloquently.
Yep.
And because I like to give credits to them, the takeaway from this one, obviously, is midshipman Alonzo Frame. I don't see Alonzo. But Russell Tovey, really, he's such an endearing actor. You know, if for those of you who are familiar with, you know, Being Human and things like that, I mean, just great stuff from him. But he just remarkably holds it together so well for having a gut shot wound through the entire thing.
Yeah.
Like, never dropping. He just keeps stumbling back and forth across the bridge. I got this.
Yeah, but then, I mean, having Kylie Minogue as Astrid Perth, like that, she was a great companion in this one. And I was really upset when I found out that she was just going to be a one-off companion, that it wasn't going to be a continuing thing.
Well, she kind of has a career.
Well, yeah, but I honestly didn't know much about Kylie Minogue, and I didn't recognize her. Yeah. So I was like, oh, no, this would be great. I kind of like her, and oh, she's dying. That sucks.
But I never thought that she would have been a continuing companion because of the fact that, you know, again, coming off of Rose, coming off of Martha, she was smitten with him from the jump. You know, you should see me in the morning. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. A little too quick to leap into the bed there. Let's keep it friendly.
Yeah, that's true. But at the time, just like not knowing anything as I was going into it, I thought she would have been great. Now, in retrospect, yeah, I can see where it wouldn't have worked out all that well, but yeah. Right.
Now, his true companion should have been Panacabalada.
Yes, yes.
a little red, spiky-headed, pinhead cyborg would have been a great companion to run around with. Panacabalada.
Well, that was one reason why I thought that Astrid would be interesting, because she wasn't, you know, your typical modern-day Londoner. It was someone different that, you know, he could possibly learn stuff from, like someone else that could explain something that wasn't, you know, modern day London.
I did like the fact, again, you know, giving RTD credit for keeping his universe tight. You know, we get our new stand owner, Wilfred Mott.
Yeah.
So, and again, just the whole, we start to get this whole premise about, you know, all of the UK, or UK, the nation of UK, as right, part of Great Britain next to Great France and Great Germany, has gotten so punchy from how their Christmases are, you know, so everyone's hiding, and yet
everyone flees the city.
Yeah, precisely. But, you know, and it just makes the punchline that much better, the fact that every time these things happen, Donna was nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
She was scuba diving, or she got a hangover and missed all this stuff. It's just, I love some of the little details that RTD always made sure that his characters' backstories brought with them. So
what's the character on How I Met Your Mother? The Blitz? That's what she was.
Oh, man. Oh, so then the next one that we get after Donna was the next doctor.
And right.
So this, you know, the doctor has just had multiple people, like, you know, people come and then they go, and then they come and then they go, and then they come and then they go. So here we run into what he believes to be the next version of him.
Which is, I mean, and I know that it's gotten so much besmirchment, it is looked upon now so strangely because of David Morrissey's involvement with it, and they're like, well, that's the governor. No, his whole typecast is completely tainted now, because he can't be charming and wonderful, because he's this eye patch wielding psychopath. But he saved us from a giant wooden Cyberman, or not wooden, but gigantic
steampunk,
which was some pretty cool effects, even though the whole premise was rather balls.
Yeah. This was one of those that I think I would like to go back and rewatch it again now, because at the time I knew I was getting close to the end of Tennant's run, and I did not like that. And I was,
oh, okay.
And
you
so,
were being reminded of his mortality.
Yeah. And I was like, well, this isn't the guy that replaces him. Why are they doing this to me? It was just, it bothered me that they were playing so much with the end of it because I knew it was coming and I didn't want to deal with it. So I'd like to go back and watch this now without any of that just to see if it might be better than I remember it.
Mm, okay. I would, as far as, you know, looking to all of these that we were going through, I would put this one on the shelf with, you know, had its cute moments, but all in all, I just really was not much of a fan of the episode in general, or the story in general. Mm-hmm. And then to really kind of label it as the Christmas episode was just kind of an afterthought. They said, you know, it's all over. Oh, by the way, hey guys, it's Christmas. So why don't we all, you know.
But then the next one that we got had very little to do with Christmas aside from like the name check.
You know, honestly, until right now, I didn't know that this was a Christmas episode that year because, you know, I just mainlined all of these on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this is just one of the specials that I watched. I didn't realize it was the Christmas episode.
Right. Yeah. So we're talking about the End of Time Part 1. Right. And at the beginning, you've basically got Wilf saying he's going to go down to the pub and he's got these little reindeer antlers on. And that's pretty much it, aside from the random Christmas decorations.
Yeah. And the fact that it's snowing on Ood's heads.
Yeah.
Other than that.
But, I mean, this was... I have trouble putting this in with the Christmas episodes. I know it was, but like Haley said, it's, there's no way of knowing that it is if you're not paying attention to the minutia.
Right, right. But I think if you were just to... If we're just going through and we're making sure that as far as, you know, the points where the series has addressed the holiday, mm-hmm. and incorporated it in some small component, yeah, throw that on the list. I mean, same as we did with the Daleks Master Plan.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, this is difficult to look at without considering the second part, because I mean, this really was part two of a two part deal. Mm-hmm. So looking at this and saying, okay, let's separate this and this part is the only, it's hard to do, but then you've got, you know, the End of Time Part 2, which was not a Christmas special. So it's one of those, like, how do you really want to play it? So we're including it in the list and let's just go ahead and move on now. But then the next one that we got is actually, this is my personal favorite Christmas special that we've gotten so far. It was A Christmas Carol. And this is the first one with Matt Smith. You've got Amy and Rory have just gotten married and they're on this ship that's out of control now. And it's, I mean, this really is like almost verbatim A Christmas Carol. It's just, okay, we'll set it on a different planet and give it some sci-fi elements. And the Doctor is the ghost of Christmas past, present, future. So, mm-hmm. yeah, but yep. I think that this was
technically Amy was Christmas future.
Well, yeah.
at the jump. Although that was a great twist to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's put aside all of our concern over paradoxes and so forth, and the fact that, you know, the Sardic shouldn't be hugging himself as a child because that's, you know, no, timelines are going to implode on themselves.
Where the time erasing bad things?
Yeah.
but other than that, no, it had a lot of great temporal play elements to it. It gave Moffat an opportunity to write a lot of emotional dialogue, which, you mm-hmm. know, that's what he does best. And not to mention the fact that he loves some of the more labyrinthine scripts. So this one allowing, you know, Smith to do his slide in and out of the room, jump back and forth through time. I'm here. No, I'm back there in your past. Ha ha. Look, I'm on the screen. You know, this was the two of them playing to all of their strengths.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, like I've said before, that this was actually the episode that got me into Doctor Who. Because I was at work one night and I was listening to a podcast and they just happened to start talking about this show and they played the clip from when Matt Smith comes in out of the chimney when he's like, sorry, it was Christmas Eve, there was a chimney, and my whole brain just went, what the hell? And that one little line that he put, I was like, you know what? I might need to give this a chance. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I went back to Rose and started from there and worked my way through. So by the time I got to this, I was like, oh yeah, this is the one. But I mean, this will always have a special place in my heart.
And you've got a phenomenal cast across the board. Even the child actors in this one are extremely strong. Mm-hmm. I should say child and not really looking like he's 17 or 18 year old. Man, you age fast. But I mean, Michael Gambon, or I'm sorry, Dumbledore jumping into the, into the show here.
And just call him Dumbledore. That's
yeah. Dumbledore? That's what I said. Dumbledore. Dumbledore. Yes, Dumbledore. You better write this down because I'm going to forget all of this. Was just phenomenal as Sardaukar and the arc that he goes through. I actually, you know, if you want to put it into that sort of that Scrooge premise, you know, an E.S. Eliot Sardaukar, Ebenezer Scrooge, come on. Not really trying terribly hard here, Moffat. But watching his progression as he starts to, you know, as these memories are being forced into his head and dealing with that is just an interesting take. You know, we talk about the fact that there's so many times in the show where, you know, history is rewritten, but history can't be rewritten except when it is. Right. And what impact does that have on the individuals who are cognizant of the fact that it's changing? And, you know, we've always talked about the idea of, oh, if you're in the eye of the storm, when history has changed around you, you'll be the only ones left to know how things were before the change. But what if this is being, we're altering your memories personally, your past, not just the stuff around you. And I just thought that that was an interesting thing to toy with in light of everything else going on in this episode. It's one of the reasons why I got to agree with you. It's probably my favorite Christmas ep to air thus far.
And see, one of the things that I do enjoy about that whole aspect that they play with the rewriting time and everything is when the doctor goes back to see young Elliot and whatnot, and you get the whole bow ties are cool thing. And then when that happens, they flash back to the old one and he realizes he's wearing a bow tie. And I keep meaning to go back and see if he was wearing it beforehand. I don't think that he was, but I keep meaning to go back and see it. And every time I turn it on, I get lost in the story that because by that point I forget. Yeah.
Oh, you mean when you first see him before the changes start to occur?
No, like as the changes are starting to occur, you know, he's sitting there watching the little video of the doctor interacting with him as a child. And the doctor does the whole, hey, bow ties are cool thing. And then they go back to him and he's like, oh, and he puts his hand on his neck and you realize he's wearing a bow tie.
Right. No, I don't believe so. I think I noted because he had this really cool, Sardaukar had this really cool layover vest thing he was wearing. And I'm pretty sure it was with a cravat.
That's what initially. I keep thinking too, but I always forget to check. So, but yeah, that was one of the, even whether he's wearing it the whole time or it changed at that point, it's a fun element.
And those are the kind of things that Moffat thrived on too. He loved, you know, being able to put those little things, you know, the were you paying attention little elements.
Yeah.
And which adds to the rewatchability as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, and then I'm just going to go ahead and step out of the room for now. You guys can talk about this
it's one. It's everybody's favorite special, The Doctor, the Widow, and the Wardrobe.
Yeah, no. This...
Because we love episodes about angry trees and...
it's definitely an episode that aired.
Yes.
The only thing about this that I enjoyed was at the beginning when the Doctor's got the backward space suit and... what's her name is trying to break into the TARDIS and he's like, you know, he starts describing, oh, it's got a quantum quadruple lock thing and it, you know, goes into his techno babble. And then she's like, oh, and there you go. And he's like, oh, suddenly the past 900 years don't feel so safe anymore. And, and then you realize that, no, wait, this is actually just a regular police call box. And that was a fun element for me. And then the rest of the episode happened and yeah.
There were hammocks. Those were cool.
Oh, but this just, it almost seemed too, like, I understand with Christmas episodes, you don't want to take yourself too seriously, at least up to this point, because they weren't part of the regular season. They weren't part of the regular series. So it was, you know, keep them separate, keep them lighthearted because it's Christmas. But this one just seemed to go a step too far and be like, you know what? None of this crap is going to matter. There's absolutely no weight to any of it. And the one thing that actually did carry some weight, we're going to retcon at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about that, but yeah, this is probably as far as anyone that you're going to say just functions. Well, Jay would say it doesn't function, but just functions right out of the can. You can just put the lid on at the end and say, okay, that's a baby, you know?
Yeah, that's a thing. It's done. I mean, I don't want to crap on it if anyone truly didn't enjoy this. I mean, this is completely my opinion. Am I the only one that thinks this way, or is this just pretty much how everyone else feels too? Is it?
Well, I mean, if you're going through rewatching the show, and this is just, you know, an episode that comes up after one episode and before another, it's fine. It's just kind of forgettable in the middle. But when it aired, you know, it's the only episode you see for months on either side, and it really doesn't hold up to that level of scrutiny.
Yeah, because at this point, I had actually caught up, and we had finished watching series 6. I want to say it was like 3 days before Christmas. You know, I put in a gigantic effort at the end. I was like, all right, we've got like 8 episodes to get through. I want to be caught up by Christmas. So I actually watched this one. I'm not sure if I watched it live or if it was time shifted or whatever, but I basically watched it either Christmas or the day after. And it was heartbreaking for me because at that point, like, we didn't know anything about series 7 either. So there was no release date, nothing like that. I was like, well, what? That's it? Now what? Because, I mean, you got to think, I had just gone through basically a year of watching Doctor Who, new Doctor Who, pretty much anytime I wanted to. And this is how I finish it off.
That's a little disappointing. You know, I think the one before, Christmas Carol, might have been the first episode that I watched around the time that it aired.
Really?
Really. I'm trying to think back. I think it was. I'm not positive.
Man, you definitely got the lucky draw on that one. Okay, but then the next one that we get was actually The Snowman. And this was a change because this actually happened in the middle of the series. Because normally we'd wrapped up the series and we had months and months of space. And then you get Christmas special as, hey, here's a special treat. And, you know, back to waiting for the next series. But this one was actually in the middle of it.
And this one is probably my favorite of the Christmas specials.
Okay.
I really like the Clara we got in this one.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm a fan of the Paternoster Gang, especially the way we saw them in this episode as really supporting characters and really working where the Doctor wasn't able to.
I did appreciate the fact that it gave an interesting take on what would you do with this most affable, you know, giant 12-year-old of a doctor persona, and how does he function when he goes dark? You know, how do you really convey that? And now that he's been on his own and he's become this this recluse of sorts. Granted, living on a cloud, okay, but it was an interesting exercise for Matt Smith, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, it was something different than we had gotten up to this point, really. Because even when he went dark, he was still, you know, it was very fleeting, and it wasn't all that horrible. Like, the only thing that I can remember before that really stood out was A Town Called Mercy that we got shortly before this.
Which didn't resolve itself well, in my opinion, because of the fact that he just got, you know, kind of verbally slapped around for a couple of minutes by Amy, and everything was okay again.
Exactly. So this is the first time that we'd seen him really despondent and really, really dark and not have anyone to really snap him out of it. So it was a nice change. It was something that really separated the tone of what we had before. And I mean, just change everything, really shake it all up, because, I mean, this was completely different.
Right. And for me personally, seeing that they were suddenly actually going to bring up the great intelligence, which was like, I haven't heard about the great intelligence since back to Troughton here. What are they're going to play this? That this is a long game they're playing. You know, how are they doing this? And then we come to find out, however clunkily it was executed, that this was going to be a predominant, you know, story arc going forward. I will still stand that I wished that it had been something much more, but we got what we got.
Yeah.
And we don't get upset.
But I mean, this was, you know, one, you brought Richard E. Grant into the canon. You know, he's actually a canon part of the story now, instead of, you know, in the, what was it? The comedy special that he was a part of. You know, you've got Ian McKellen doing the voice of the great intelligence. I mean, you've got there were a lot of great things to bring out of this. Like Haley said, we had a fantastic Clara that I think was actually a huge detriment to the second half of the series.
Right.
But I mean, you know, then you really got to see the Paternoster Gang as what we know them as now, instead of just, you know, random side characters in a two-parter that had a lot going on at the time.
Yeah, they showed up, they did some stuff, they went home.
Yeah. So this was a chance to really get to know these characters.
If you want to say that this is sort of an establishment of the formula of the paternosters we're going to represent, even down to the point where, you know, people can go ahead and say that this is the point where Strax really became the comedy relief.
Help, sir. I think I've been run over by a cab.
But say what you will about the fact that it felt a little kind of hokey at times. It was phenomenally done. Mm-hmm. I mean, it may have seemed a little out of place to put these over the top kind of goofball moments in, but for what they were, Starkey was incredible and continues to be. I mean, he's created a character. The love him or hate him, you're never going to forget him. So
yeah, exactly.
It's probably as far as being one of the most often quoted online. I mean, the whole, because this is, correct me if I'm wrong, this is where they get the, I'm the clever one, you're the potato one.
Yeah, exactly.
It's everything that goes forward with these things. So, or the Sherlock Holmes gags. I mean, you have to give credit to the cast for creating such a memorable experience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then we get the time of the Doctor. So we've been through Series 7. We've been through the 50th anniversary special, and now we're going into what is going to be Smith's final episode.
Mm-hmm. And which just happened to have something to do with Christmas, but that's really not important right now.
Right. Another one that it's hard for me to think of as a Christmas episode because of all the other stuff that's going on.
But it's in Christmas.
In Christmas.
I know.
It's a town called Christmas.
But it gets so overshadowed by all the other stuff that happens in the episode that I'm like, oh yeah, and it was Christmas.
Yeah, but I mean this one was difficult to place because I mean you had it on the tail, I mean a month almost to the day after the 50th anniversary. So we've just had the Day of the Doctor, we've just had all of the amazing stuff that came with that, and then we try and go into the time of the Doctor and wrap up this story that's been played out over the past two seasons. And try and tie up all the loose ends and things like that and all of the new stuff that came in with the 50th special. And there was a lot they were trying to cram into here. And plus it was going to be, you know, the regeneration episode. So it's hard to look at this one and really judge it on any one aspect because there's so much crap.
Well, I don't know. I always love the episode. There are very few elements out of it that I can really kind of pull apart with my usual tongs of critique. Tongs of critique. That's kind of like the scalpel of Rassilon. But I mean, this is one where you spend the entire episode waiting. Is it going to happen now? Is it now?
Yeah.
How about now? 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 No, maybe now? No, not now.
Yep,
what the hell? Amy Pond?
He's gone. Now? He's gone. Oh, wait. No, now he's gone. Oh, wait. 8 months later. Oh, no, not yet. Yeah, this was the first regeneration episode that I'd ever watched live, obviously. Mm-hmm. So it was, and I was like sitting there waiting for the moment to come where the tears were going to flow. And because it was like a constant stutter stop kind of thing, it really robbed a lot of that for me because it was, you know, you see him old on the tower and he does the whole regeneration thing. And I'm like, oh, wow, that he's kind of gone, isn't it? Oh, no, nope. Wait, he's not. And then it's, you know, he's getting emotional. And then I'm like, oh, it's starting to come. And then Amy comes walking. I'm like, wait a minute, what? And then he sneezes out Capaldi, and I was like, whoa, wait. Like, I mean, it was just such an abrupt thing that it was difficult for being a first regeneration.
Yeah.
First live one anyway. But, and I mean, you got to think a lot of people came into the show with Smith. So for a lot of people, this was their first regeneration.
Right. Well, I think as far as the first experience and that sort of thing, whether it was something being watched live or whether it's, you know, you're plowing through on a on an absorption, if you're coming into this, boy, if you're a new Whovian now and you're just coming into these things, wow, okay. Yeah. Well, welcome aboard, because it's just been getting weirder and weirder for about the past year and a half. I think as far as and we talked about this so much while it was happening, about what this did for closure or didn't do for closure because of the fact that it seemed so kind of clunky, well, not clunky, but just unusual in the way that the closing of one chapter and the starting of the next was happening. Mm-hmm. Or the fact that it was kind of pump faked a few times.
Flipping back and forth a couple pages. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, but I mean, if we're looking at it today as far as a Christmas episode, you know, or the fact that there's always some little underlying Christmas message in there somewhere, you know, some sort of a redeeming thing that you get out of it. That's your sort of your takeaway sentiment. This one just doesn't have it. Mm-hmm. This is coincidental that it happens to, you know, involve, you know, Christmas dinner with Clara's gran and
yeah.
Who I honestly never thought we were going to see or hear from again. So really surprising. Mm-hmm. But or the town called Christmas, and you think, all right, well, maybe they're going to work this in here somewhere now, where all of it, it's really just a play on words. Mm-hmm. And doesn't really have a whole lot to do with that, other than the fact that the, you know, kids are bringing him presents every once in a while.
So does the way that we had the Christmas specials before, is like I said before, it was, you know, months and months of waiting, and then a little treat, and then more waiting for the series. And with starting with the snowmen, it was really part of the show. Like, you had to be caught up on the show in order to understand what was going on. And then right. the same thing with Time of the Doctor. And then now with Last Christmas, it looks like it's going to be the same thing. The difference being that with the snowmen, we'd had the first half of series 7 late in the fall.
Right. Doing the break, mm-hmm. Sequence like that.
And then with the Time of the Doctor, we, like I said, we had the 50th special right before this, you know, mm-hmm. a month before. And now we've got the, you know, Last Christmas coming a month after series 8 ended. So right. Do you think that if they went back to the, you know, show everything kind of in the spring and have it all wrapped up by summer, do you think they could still incorporate the Christmas specials like they did? Or do you think this is just because of the time frame that we've got everything now?
Is your question more along the lines of do they recognize the Christmas episode as a series closer or series opener?
Yeah, I mean, do you think that it would be something that we can include in the storyline that's going on if there were more of a break between them?
Yes. Yeah. I think I see what your point is about the fact that, you know, if you got it a little closer stitched to one end or the other, you can use it as story progression. But even if there is a considerable gap, because I know, when we got Time of the Doctor, that was so December 25th, we didn't end up getting Deep Breath until August.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about, you know, putting your viewers on ice for a while and yeah. saying, you know, we'll get back to this. But I think having any kind of a gap, as long as you're not stretching it quite that long. So let's say, what could be some of the potential production, or not production schedules, but broadcast schedules that we could be facing ahead now? So if we pick up, I'm gonna do the math in my head here. I'm drawing in the air. So let's just, you know, don't mind me as I'm, you know,
carry the three
finger gestures.
Now he's gonna turn around and it'll be written "listen" in the air.
No. Yeah, I need a blackboard and a lot of preponderance of chalk appearances, so Haley can come up with some, you know, bogus theory about chalk.
So the thing that's getting to me, though, is if you have casual viewers that watch the show and then when it ends and they go on about their life and they don't think about it much anymore, and then it's like, oh yeah, it's Christmas, there's a special Doctor Who thing, and then they come back to it and you pick up the storyline, are people going to remember enough of that to be able to just throw them back into it? Or do you think they're going to need a previously on Doctor Who?
Well, there's going to be a marathon on all day. They have no excuse.
Right. They thankfully have never really fallen into the habit, because I just don't think, and I don't mind it for other programs, but I just don't think that it suits this one to have a previously.
Mm-hmm.
I give all the credit in the world to shows that have some of the storylines that are intricate enough to be able to pull back from something 5, 6, 7 seasons ago, but you need a, you know, previously on, or a supernatural then now kind of thing to be mm-hmm. able to remind you, oh yeah, that character we haven't heard from for 4 years. But as far as Doctor Who goes, I think some of the way that it's presented is not, or at least they've made a conscious effort to present it in a way that you don't always need that primer again.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They're pretty good about weaving the necessary information into the storyline that you don't need the previously on bit.
Yeah. I could do with a quick, you know, someone says, oh, do you remember blah, blah, blah? And I get a quick flash sequence, 3 seconds from series 2, where somebody bumps into the doctor's shoulder walking down the street. Oh, pardon me. Oh, yes, him. He's back now. I don't think they'd be harmed by, you know, saying, we know you haven't watched anything, any new content in 2, 3, you know, X number of months, but we're going to pick up where we left off because we know you've been waiting for these answers and we don't have any for you. Here's more questions.
So a typical Moffat.
Right.
So, all right. So how do we think that this is going to go with moving forward into Last Christmas? We've heard some rumors and stuff that this is actually going to be the darkest Christmas special that we've ever gotten and things like that. And it, with everything that just wrapped up in Series 8, how do we think that this is really going to play out? Is this going to be, you know, just a progression in what we've gotten previously, or do we think that they're going to try and go back to the set the Christmas episode aside as a story in and of itself kind of thing?
For this one in particular, I think because it's following so closely on the end of Series 8, it's going to have to kind of be a wrap-up to what's happened so far. Mm-hmm. It can't really stand on its own the way it could if it were another month separated.
Right. Yeah. I think, well, obviously, because of the lingering Clara companionship question out there, it has to obviously extend upon that premise and give us something, even if it's just a, you know, kick the can down the road extension on the story and say, yes, we know you're wondering all these things, but let's just take a little sidebar here for a second, have one more adventure. Or what may not be one more adventure, who knows? But as far as the all of the statements going out there about the creep factor, and we'll talk about, you know, in the news about some of the interviews that have been coming around from the cast and crew saying about the darkness of it, a dark tone. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been aspects going back and watching some of these previous specials. Some of these had some genuine creep factor to them as well, and a lot of death, a lot of really horrible things happening to perfectly decent people. So, you know, take what you will about it. I think it's just because of the fact that they've gotten a reputation over this past series of being able to, you know, we're not pulling our punches as hard as we were before. That maybe it's just, it's all in the way that you set up the expectations.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Personally, do you guys prefer that the Christmas special just be, you know, episode 13, or do you want it to be here is, you know, Series X and it's Christmas special?
I've always liked continued storylines personally. Mm-hmm. So even if it's a little on its own, I would like it to tie in to whatever ongoing story arcs or character arcs we have.
Okay.
I've never really been a huge fan of completely encapsulated locker room episodes like that. I like it to have something it's either drawing from or something that it's seeding in a very, you know, Hansel and Gretel breadcrumb kind of way for things to come.
Okay. I think I'm in the same boat where it's, I want to see more of the story and I want to see how it goes. So it's, these last few have appealed to me because it's not just, oh yeah, no, it's, you know, the guy that plays the doctor showing up on my screen again to hold me over. It's an actual episode that I want to pay attention to kind of thing.
Right.
All right. Well, we did put the question out there to people to see what they thought of Christmas specials. Wing said that he completely agrees with me. He said that the best was the Christmas Carol and the worst was the Doctor of the Widow in the Wardrobe. So no explanation needed there.
Yeah, it just is. One was exactly what it set out to be, you know, a Whovian take on a classic Christmas story. And the other was a tumultuous mess with wooden kings. So there you go. Yeah.
And then Starpie decided to write and said that he disliked...
Decided to write. In a strange stroke of verbiage, Starpie stopped speaking and decided to write. Sorry, Stargate Pioneer.
He said, I disliked Voyage of the Damned because Astrid was just too nice to die in the end. Spoilers. a little bit late there, buddy. And then he said, my favorite was probably The End of Time since it was the last appearance of Elizabeth Sladen on the show.
Yeah.
Too soon?
Never too soon for my Sarah Jane.
Yeah, so... I'd be interested to hear what other people think of these. I mean, this kind of, you know, obviously Starpie had something different than the rest of us did. So I'd like to see what other people pick up as their favorites and what they dislike about others.
Yeah. Throw some feedback on GallifreyPublicRadio.com and just let us know, you know, if you weren't tweeting or posting with us on Facebook in regards to as we draw for these things. And just to kind of just make a note there, we'll put the calls out for feedback on whatever format you choose at a couple points through the week to get your takes on these things. And we love to have them because it gives us an opportunity to get some dissension among the ranks too. We tend to fall into the same, I feel the same way. And I feel the same way as you too.
A little bit of an echo chamber.
Well, we've got no contrary opinions here. So until Kira starts drinking again, everything's going to be hunky-dory.
Yeah, give us something to talk about. That'd be fun. So,
but it's the holidays, so the drinking shouldn't be an issue.
No, I can't. I can't.
That's right.
It's antibiotics, man.
Virgin eggnogs for Kier.
Which is just glop in a cup if you don't put
in it. Gotta thin it out somehow. Jeez. So next week, obviously, we are going to be talking about Last Christmas. I'm excited for this one. I can't wait.
Really? I want to do another list episode. Can we skip that?
12 awesomely strange things you didn't know would happen.
You'll never believe what came out of my cereal box. So we do have some news to talk about, though. So some of the interviews that have come out here recently, one of them I found interesting was that Moffat has actually responded to some of the people that complained about the series finale becoming the Clara show, where, you know, she just completely took over from the, you know, from the get-go with her eyes appearing in the title sequence to, you know, her name coming first. And I mean, there was a lot of people that were really upset about the fact that she basically took over what was supposed to be, you know, the Doctor's big thing. And so he actually did have some things to talk about here.
Yeah, well, letting us know that it was rather intentional. Mm-hmm. And that he wasn't doing it to really irritate the fans. He was doing it because this is something that he was exploring with the character. You know, when he first started kind of conceptualizing what Clara was going to become, you know, he wanted to sort of take the idea of taking the Doctor's premise and putting it within this human young woman and saying, you know, what would happen if you've got somebody who's got that kind of that clever, that resourcefulness, that wit, that Geronimo mentality. So now as you go forward and you've got someone who sort of has taken that adventurous nature and is put up against or is working with a new Doctor dynamic. He put an interesting spin on it because it started tying Danny into it too. The whole idea of, you know, since she didn't really have a romantic relationship to be able to pull from in the previous series, this love affair, as he refers to it, or this botched love affair, is just something that she's responsible for messing up. Really, when it comes down to it, because she's too much like the Doctor in that. She's got herself drawn in so many directions and doing all of these things and trying to keep all the plates spinning, as the Doctor does. Mm-hmm. Slightly OCD, but at the same time, ADHD. My personal combination of letters.
OCDHD.
There's lots of them. On your DVD. but it's just something where she's predispositioned to have a lot of these things fail around her as well, because she's just too much like the Doctor in that nature. So I think he was poking a little bit at the fact that he created a female human Doctor, mm-hmm. in a way. So,
yep. But then the next story that we've got is this one. I have trouble reading this. The headline is Doctor Who Christmas Specials. Are they getting nerdier?
Let's ask a question because people will read the article.
So we're talking about a show about a time traveling alien, and you're asking if it's getting
too nerdy.
Well, I guess that means that if you were to watch them from a few years back, they were completely slapstick or involved sports or something and had nothing to do with scientific concepts or anything involving maths. You don't want maths involved in there anywhere. Aliens are right out. The hell with the whole alien thing, because that's way out there. They're ET.
That's why they liked the first Christmas special so much, because it barely had the alien in there.
Yeah, giant spider, red spider ladies, that's right out. That's never going to work.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really understand. And I read through the article and I wasn't really grasping what they were saying, other than the fact that if you want to take maybe Time of the Doctor, because if, you know, if we're going to put that in the list of Christmas episodes, because of the fact that that one had so much baggage coming along, mm-hmm. you know, from Day of the Doctor that had to be addressed. And the fact that we were dealing with a key change in the show that had to be addressed and had to be handled very deftly, or you were going to anger a lot of people far more than they were already angered.
Yeah.
So you want to call that nerdy? Nah, I just call that a nice complex script. If that's nerdy, then great. I'll take nerdy shows all day long, because I want something that that challenges me as a viewer, instead of saying flashy lights, Christmas, woo.
Yeah, yeah, and that's something that we've all agreed on, is that, you know, that give us something to actually enjoy instead of just, oh look, placeholder. Now wait longer.
You will take what we give you, and you will like it.
Oh, and then we've actually got Peter Capaldi, Jenna Coleman, and Nick Frost have actually started talking about the Christmas special.
Well, yeah, they had said a few things along the way as production had wrapped up and all. But as far as sharing some of their experiences on it and their summaries without giving too much away. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Have you read through everything that they had to say about it?
Oh, some of them. I mean, you know, Jenna Coleman's excited about the fact that they have the real Santa Claus. It's no longer a robot dressed up like Santa.
Very true. Yeah. Or should they at least acknowledge? Should they acknowledge in there somewhere that his name is Jeff?
Yeah.
And Frank Sinatra's involved and things like
that. Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting to see what some of the feedback that they've got on it, some of the takes they have.
Well, I mean, everything we've been hearing up to this point, the one who's been speaking the most about it has been Moffat himself. I mean, he loves to be able to point out the fact that he's put something, you know, again, very clever into your hands, and you're never going to see this coming. Oh, it's going to be a cracker. But I like Capaldi's, you know, he's enjoying the true Santa aspect of it. The adventure side of it that they're going to be having, the bringing Nick Frost in as comedy relief, but at the same time there's supposed to be that slight bit of menace to it, is going to be interesting, because I've seen a long list of films that Frost has been involved in, and I've never really seen him as anything particularly threatening. So it's going to be an interesting thing for me to be able to see if he can pull off the gravity that's required for the role, but can he represent the role well, first of all, and then can he take the role and do something a little unusual with it without going goofball unusual? Because we know he can do slapstick and, or, you know, or physical comedy and things of that sort. Mm-hmm. Can he do something that, that gives it this dark tone that we've also been promised?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm excited to just see how it all plays out. At this point, I'm almost done, you know, conjecturing and saying, oh, it's going to be this, that, and the other. And I'm just, I mean, we're days away at this point, and I'm excited to just see how it all plays out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
He did provide one, Peter Capaldi had provided one additional interview, sort of a little lengthier interview that he had done with the Express. And his discussions through there were really more along the lines, because he was being asked some direct questions about the experience of doing a Christmas special, you know, and how from a production standpoint, how that may differ as opposed to any of the other cycles that they'd been through in their three production waves that they do, the three blocks. Mm-hmm. He's sort of his discussion was that the time time had gone by very quickly through the whole thing. But I think personally, he says as far as favorite scenes to be shot, he's concerned that there's going to be a lot of things that he really put together that's going to be on the editing room floor. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of an unusual response to the question. You know, someone says, you know, what's your favorite scene in the special that you did? And he says, well, we cut out a lot. Well, okay.
I mean, that's one way of dodging the question. Yeah. He needs to take a few more lessons from Moffat, though, because that really is just, it makes you sit there and think, well, what?
He did admit that he liked the chemistry working with Nick Frost, and that Nick obviously was not going to be taken very seriously on the set, and it's pretty much a given. I can expect that to happen from all the, you know, if you ever watch any of the behind-the-scenes footage from any of the Cornetto trilogy, there's probably as much time spent trying to recover themselves so that they can actually do the next scene. So I would love to see if they ever do behind-the-scenes stuff.
A gag reel.
Yeah. I would imagine that the vast majority of it is going to be coming from this particular shoot.
Yeah, probably. Oh, and then we've... let me see, what's the next one here? I got lost in my tabs. And then we've actually got the title revealed for episode 1 of series 9.
Yes. Which could say a lot of things here. If they're going to be calling it The Magician's Apprentice...
Yeah, because there were a couple times during Series 8 that, you know, the doctor said that he felt like he looked like a magician. Mm-hmm. So is this, you know, him getting a quote-unquote new apprentice, or is it really accepting Clara as the, you know, you're going to be my second-in-command kind of thing?
Right. You've been sort of, you know, treating yourself as an extension of the doctor, mm-hmm. Even going so far as assuming the title once or twice along the way. So, okay, if you want to learn the ropes, this is the way we're going to go about it.
Yeah.
Or is he going to be somebody else's apprentice for once?
That would be interesting. Again, if somebody's not wearing a pointy hat and doing something with mops working on their own, then
I completely failed us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, they're going to say that they're going to go and find the original backstory on Dickens's David Copperfield, and they meet David Copperfield in Vegas.
No, it kind of falls apart after a little bit. Oh, and then the last little bit of news that we've got here is actually that... Yeah, I love how this is kind of played up, because it says the new Ninth Doctor miniseries confirmed in comics. Comics. It's one of those, it's very easy to skip over the comics.
Right. Yeah, that's true. But no, it's Titan Comics who've been doing a lot of their recent Doctors. You know, they finally have now started inking some 12th Doctor titles. You know, we've actually just in this past year been handed a couple of really great series for 10th and 11th Doctors. So the goal is that we will be getting these, I think, March. Yeah, second week of March, you'll get it before St. Pat's. And I think the series is supposed to run 5 parts. So you'll get Weapons of Past, P-A-S-T, Past Destruction will be the first one. And their striking likeness of Eccleston on there, you know, ears in full force. So,
well, they can usually get the cover right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll see how they do when they animate them on the interior. But yeah, so as far as publishing materials, I don't know, for those of you who also play Doctor Who Legacy and things, you notice that as far as a lot, they've been doing the advent calendar and adding opportunities to pick up all these additional companions and things along the way. Jay, I know you still play Haley. Do you still play actively?
Not really, not as much as I used to.
Okay. But they've been, as a result, they've been handing out all kinds of interesting side characters. I mean, they grabbed
some of the Big Finish characters, some of the comic characters. It's, yeah.
One of the last ones I saw that they used actually was the companion in the War Doctors book that just got published. You know, the Engines of War, that, you know, how they were saying that they were going to start doing novelization, or not novelizations, but they were going to be doing extended novels using the War Doctors period. Mm-hmm. And that it was going to be carefully structured. It wasn't going to interfere at all with canon or things of that sort, because it's all obviously, you know, within his very unknown, you know, block of time there. But his companion from the story is actually, or well, call companion, his partner in battle within that story is actually one of the characters that the Tiny Rebel Games was giving away just about 2 days ago. So they're really quick on the turnaround, because the book just published. So talk about some hardcore fans, you know, those two.
Oh yeah, they really are huge fans, and it was so much fun when we got the chance to talk to them shortly after the game came out. Actually, You can tell that they really are just huge fans of the show, and that's a lot of where this comes from.
Yeah, we'll have to have them back on sometime. They're tremendously busy these days. They do all their Stitcher stuff, but we'll see.
But then the little bit of non-news that we've got, and this is just a picture that's been going around Tumblr, and I know it's popped up a lot of different places recently. Chris Chibnall actually tweeted out a photo from the set of Grace Point, which was the American version of Broadchurch, and I don't know, I got lost at some point. they're actually like While You Were Out cards for David Tennant's character of Detective Carver. And these were written by David Tennant. That's the hard part to take away here, but they're notes like, R. Tyler called, said something regarding a wolf. Martha Jones called, has information about Sally Sparrow. D. Noble, information regarding the library.
Yeah, so that's absolutely killing. I actually like the information about Sally Sparrow one. That's the one that kind of kills me there, because that's one of those things where you go, I always wanted to know what happened to Sally, for crying out loud. If he just returned the call.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just fun seeing that Tennant, you know, is carrying this forward into his other work, even if it's just, you know, something, some tiny little thing on a desk that you're never going to see. The fact that no matter what you're watching Tennant in, there's something Doctor Who at least going on in his head.
Maybe he should be focusing a little bit more on his American accent, not worrying so much about putting little post-it notes on his desk.
For this, I will forgive the accent. Yeah, but I do love little Easter eggs like this, and it's just great. But
just watch next week; there'll be all these like Barty Crouch things. All
No, didn't you notice his wand had a little like TARDIS topper on it? I don't know. Of course, it's been pointed out plenty of times that the 10th Doctor showed up in the episode "Parting of the Ways," and Barty Crouch Jr. was. I think he left the book in the chapter called Parting of the Ways. Yeah, just interesting ties in like that. Yep. All comes. See, it's just proof that Harry Potter and Doctor Who are meant to be together.
It's just proof that actors have a lot of downtime between shoots on the set.
They had to adjust the lighting.
Hand me that pad of paper. I got something funny.
All right. Well, I mean, this was fun going back and revisiting some of these things, and it really has got me primed for the next one coming up, and I can't wait for it. It's going to be great.
Yeah. And the Hanukkah episodes are going to be loaded.
All right. Well, this has been episode 117 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, Merry one more episode of Doctor Who to hold you over day.
And this is Kier saying, happy flying shark that goes, boom, day, everyone.
And this is Haley saying, who needs beds when you've got hammocks?
It's as if they were writing for her.
I know. That's why it's my favorite episode of the entire series.
We'll see you guys next week, and Merry Christmas.
Bye. Little Z, Alonzo.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You can also go to GunnaGeek.com to check out lots of other high-quality, geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2014.